Sound check.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. There's a movie out called Ruby Sparks. It's about an author who creates a character, a girl named Ruby. And then one day, she appears at his door. Now, I haven't seen the film, but I'm going to say it's a cautionary tale. Don't go inventing people, because you never know what's going to happen. On a related note, here's Marlena Sheets from the band Milo Green describing the person they invented, namely Milo Green.
He comes in many forms, but today he's British and albino.
Well, all I'm going to say for now is that the band Milo Green is in for a big surprise. And they'll play live for us. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's tough being a new parent. Actually, it's tough being a parent anytime, but you know how it is in the middle of the night, the feedings, the dirty diapers, the constant crying, and of course, the singing. Babies have to be sung to. But for parents who don't make a living as buskers or cabaret singers, the question of what to sing to your little one can be a little daunting. Host and CBS Sunday Morning contributor Faith Saley knows all about it because she's a recent mom. Faith, congratulations.
Hi, thank you.
So how old is young Augustus at this point?
He is 11 weeks old in 2 days, but who's counting?
Now, do you call him Gus for short?
I don't. I call him Augustus, but plenty of people call him Augie or Gus.
Okay.
So.
Does Augustus... Does he have, like, favorite songs? Does he have a tin ear? Do you have any idea what his response to your singing is at this point?
I sing to him usually when he's breastfeeding, so he's a very captive audience, and is usually too hungry to remark.
Uh-huh.
But I have a very limited repertoire. Mm-hmm. Sad. I am show tunes girl, so I don't know if this is a way of making sure that he's gay, or. or if he actually likes show tunes. I lean towards Sondheim, and he doesn't seem to have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, I'll go to, you know, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Free to Be You and Me. He seems to like it all. His nanny is more conventional, you know, lullabies. But I found out, John, that I don't know lullabies.
So was this, were you intimidated when you brought little Augustus home, and then suddenly here's this thing that you not only need to take care of, but you need
to
kind of... You have to feed that other part of him as well.
Yeah, it was... I grew up doing musical theater, so I loved to sing and was thrilled to have somebody who can't tell me to stop yet. but it is sort of yet another way... Now, this is self-imposed, but another way to feel guilty as a parent. What am I supposed to be singing to him? My brother gave me a book called Brain Rules for Baby that talks about the association between early music and intelligence. And I'm thinking, well, he went with me in utero to the opera. Is that good? Is mm-hmm. Sondheim good? Is country music okay? Or should it be sing-songy lullabies?
Now, you mentioned your brother, David,
yeah.
who is actually joining us on the line.
Yes.
From the State Department in Washington, D.C., where David and his husband have a daughter named Tallulah. So interesting names running in the family. Hey, David, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John. Hi, Faye.
Hi, brother.
You?
I'm good.
Great.
So it sounds, David, like Faith is maybe a little daunted by your singing abilities with Tallulah there. Are you on top of the whole singing game?
I do sing a lot to our daughter. I feel like I'm kind of... batting for both parents because my husband has absolutely no singing voice whatsoever.
It's true. It's awful.
So at the very least, I hope that she'll be able to carry a tune.
But mm-hmm. David, you sing to her in at least three languages.
Well, yeah, with a heavy accent, yeah.
What are the three languages? English?
English, French, and Spanish.
David, this is the point in the show where we would normally play a little music clip, but we don't have a music clip that's appropriate, so I'm going to throw it to you. Give us a sample of the kind of thing that you sing to Tallulah.
Oh, wow. Okay, there's a cute a French nursery rhyme CD that we found, and it goes something like, Il était une fermière qui allait au marché. Elle portait sur sa tête trois pommes dans un panier. Les pommes faisaient rouli-roula, les pommes faisaient rouli-roula. Stop! And that stop is actually in the French, but that it's the stop, and it means it's the English stop, and Tallulah just loves to jump in and yell stop.
I think I heard La Tête in there, right?
Yeah, and I like this song because it's also about a woman. It's a farmer, and it's the feminine version of farmer. A farmer woman is going to the market, and she's carrying on her head a basket with three apples. Mm-hmm. And it goes on from there, but I figured I'd spare you the rest.
Well,
and Tallulah like kind of picks up on it, and she's her ear is getting pretty good. She hits,
how old is Tallulah?
She's 2.5.
Oh, okay.
David, will you tell John about the changes you and Mark made to the lyric of "Summertime"?
Yeah. So summertime, the living is easy. Fish are jumping, cotton is high. Your daddy's rich and your papa's good looking. So hush, little baby, et cetera, et cetera.
It scans. It fits.
So we have to change it for a modern 21st century same-sex parent household. I especially like it because I go by papa, so I'm the good looking one. Mark's the one with
All right, David Saley, get back to the State Department there.
Thank you so much, John.
Thanks for joining us on Soundcheck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Faith Saley is with us, the journalist and culture commentator and new mom, and we're talking about singing to your babies, but also what to sing. Now, David clearly has a number of different repertoires to draw from. So you mentioned musical theater. Some of which, and Sondheim in particular, some of that stuff gets a little dark.
It's so dark. Every single song I sing Nothing's Gonna Harm You from Sweeney Todd. And even that has mentions of demons charming you with a smile. And a song that I love from Merrily, Not a Day Goes By. If you're familiar with Merrily We Roll Along, that song is sung in the first act and in the second act. And in the first act, it's terribly depressing and sad and darkly ironic.
Right.
And in the second act, because the show goes back in time, it's much more hopeful. And I actually had to look up the lyrics to the nice version of the song to sing it to my son. Otherwise, I'm not sure what he's sort of absorbing.
Well, even something like Oliver, you know, has...
I sing As Long As He Needs Me because it was my audition song when I was in eighth grade.
Really?
it's about being abused. What's her name? Nancy sings it about Bill Sykes beating her. I know. I need to sing something else, right?
Just to give folks an idea what you're talking about, this is the song from Oliver that Faith Saley sings to young Augustus.
As long as he yes, he does need me, in spite of what you see. I'm sure that he needs me. Who else would love him still when they've been used so ill?
From Oliver, that is the song As Long As He Needs Me. Faith Saley, I could see why you would sing that to a kid who's too young to understand the words. The melody
is beautiful.
It really is. And not an easy one, I would think, to sing. There are a couple of sort of surprising notes there.
Yes, and what's good about my son is he doesn't care if I change keys in the middle of it.
Okay. You mentioned venturing into country music as well.
Yeah. I feel so, your listeners are going to just throw tomatoes at the radio. I have a feeling most of them don't love the country songs I love, but there is, I'm so embarrassed. There's a Rascal Flatts song that is called God Bless the Broken Road, which the first time I heard it, I actually started crying because my marriage to Augustus's dad is my second marriage, and I feel very, very grateful and lucky to have found this man late in life, you know, because I'm a 72-year-old first-time mother, John. And
I was wondering what late in life meant.
And I love the words, as corny as they are, and so occasionally I will sing that song to myself.
All right, your choice here. You want to sing it for us, or should we hear Rascal Flatts?
It'll be bad, but I'll start it.
All right.
How does it begin? Sorry, now I have
young Augustus is hungry. Come on, he needs his music.
Performance anxiety. I set out on a narrow way many years ago, hoping I would find true love along the broken road. But I got lost a time or two. Here's where it gets too low. Wipe my brow and kept pushing through. See, he doesn't care about that. never something realizing da-da-da-da would lead me straight to you. Every long, lost dream led me to where you are. Others who broke my, they were like northern stars, pointing me on my way into your loving arms. This much I know is true, that God blessed the broken road that led me straight to you.
Yes, so in Faith Saley's household, That's a lullaby. That passes for a lullaby.
What do you think of it?
God bless the broken road.
What do you think of it, John?
You know, I, like you, when I became a parent, found that I didn't want to sing lullabies, the old baby songs and stuff. I sang songs I liked.
Yeah.
So my kids grew up on Psycho Killer by Talking Heads because I knew it and could play it on the guitar and, you know, that sort of thing. It was just Neil Young and stuff
my
like that.
My husband sings Neil Young to the baby. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I didn't expect that one of my daughters would grow up and then get like a big tattoo of Neil Young lyrics across her ribs, but
that's,
you know,
awesome.
That's okay. Golden Brown by The Stranglers, which, you know, is about a brand of heroin, but, you know, a kid doesn't know that. It's just a lovely song.
Here's my question.
Three-quarter time.
As a first-time parent, do your kids remember? Do your girls talk to you about what you sang to them?
It's funny. They remember them. Well, mainly because I sang them to them till they were like 6 or 7 or 9 or 10 or finally said, "Dad, shut up."
But that's nice. That's nice to know.
Justin
that
Bieber
matters.
Is on. So we're speaking with Faith Saley about singing to your kids, singing to your newborns. And joining us on the line now is Kathy Fink. She is half of the duo Kathy and Marcy. And they've put together several records for families, including one last year called Sing to Your Baby. Kathy, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. So what is Sing to Your Baby all about?
Well, you know, listening to your conversation, which is really fun, obviously both of you felt comfortable singing to your kids.
Right.
And neither of you feels like, hey, I'm a professional performer, I've got a beautiful voice, although, Faith, you did a great job of even singing in the same key as Rascal Flatts. But in 30 years of performing for kids and families, we had a constant stream of parents coming up to us saying, I always wanted to sing to my kid, but I don't think I can sing. I have a terrible voice. I don't know what to do. But we wanted to empower them to sing to their kids, again, not with the typical old lullabies that everybody has heard a million times. We wanted to bring new repertoire into it. And you said the most important thing already. Your kid thinks you're a rock star. It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't last. It doesn't last, Kathy.
What matters is that you're loving your child with your voice, and they're hearing and feeling that.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear an example of what you're talking about. This is from the album Sing to Your Baby from Kathy and Marcy, and it's called Rockin' My Baby.
Rockin' my baby in the morning, rockin' my baby in the afternoon, rockin' my baby in the morning, rockin' my baby, take your worries away. Dancing with my baby in the morning, dancing with my baby in the afternoon, dancing with my baby in the morning, dancing with my baby, take your worries away.
Kathy and Marcy with Rockin' My Baby. That comes from the book and CD called Sing to Your Baby. Kathy Fink's on the line with us. Faith Saley with me here in the studio. We're talking about what to sing to your baby. Kathy, just to understand here how this works, the point is not for a new parent to play your CD to the kid, but to what? Sing along?
Well, you're correct. As far as we're concerned, the bottom priority would be to play that CD for your kid. The top priority is, before your baby's even born, to get the book and the CD or gift it to someone and start singing along with it. Start singing to your baby in the womb. Start getting comfortable with that whole concept. What we hope is that people will make these songs their own.
Yeah. I always found that bath time was a great time for singing.
Sing.
Yeah. Bathing
Absolutely.
The kid. Great time. Kathy Fink from the duo Kathy and Marcy, thank you so much for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you very much.
Faith, do you have a favorite time, a favorite activity? You mentioned when you're nursing,
yeah,
Augustus, that's a favorite time to sing. Anything else?
It's usually then, and then if he gets fussy during the burping, that's always nice. And it's nice when Dad comes home, he picks up the guitar and plays some Beatles and some mm-hmm. Neil Young. Neil Young, apparently a favorite for babies in Manhattan.
Well, it's just Brooklyn in my case, but, you know, it's not too difficult to sing and to pick out on the guitar. So
it's interesting she mentioned singing or exposing your child to music before they're born,
yeah,
because we had season tickets to the opera, and the first time I really felt Augustus kick, and not just, you know, oh, is that gas? You know, I knew he was kicking, was at, how do you pronounce it, Götterdämmerung?
Götterdämmerung, yes.
Yes.
Wagner.
Yes, so I don't know if that means my kid likes Wagner or really doesn't like Wagner.
Hmm. See, my wife and I, she claims that the first time that our first daughter really, really kicked hard, that she knew there was something going on, we were at a monster truck rally at Madison Square Garden.
Of course you were.
just din. It was just like deafening, and it smelled, and it was just like babies kicking. So we asked some of our listeners for their advice on what to sing to your kids, and Joanne from Connecticut left this on our website, Hush Little Baby. Subbing in items if sleeplessness persists. For example, if that hot air balloon won't float, Mama's going to buy you a big tugboat. If that big tugboat runs aground, Mama's going to buy you a blue tick hound, as it keeps Mama awake thinking of rhymes. Now, I don't know about you, but that to me was always the biggest challenge, was staying awake.
Right. No, I like that suggestion. Plus, it's more feminist, because that song is all about Papa going to buy you a mockingbird and a diamond ring. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Michael in Arizona via Twitter wrote us about Lionel Richie's song Hello. He writes, I did hello in my best Lionel Richie, that is, poorly, to my ex's kid, and she would drop like a stone.
I long to see the sunlight in your hair and tell you time and time again how much I care. Sometimes I feel my heart will overflow. Hello, I've just got to let you know.
Lionel Richie's Hello worked for Michael in Arizona back in the day, and Faith Saley is figuring out what works for her and young Augustus. We've been speaking with the journalist and new mom today about what to sing to your baby. And Faith, it's great to see you.
Sorry, John, I nodded off there. thank you. Thank you for the suggestions.
Faith Saley, my guest. This is Soundcheck.
But let me start by saying,
someone love you. Tell me how to win your heart, for I haven't got a clue. But let me start by saying I love you.
All right, now it's your turn. Tell us what you sing to your kids, or used to sing, or would sing. Are you a crooner of classics like Rockabye Baby, or do you stray into more adult territory? Clearly, I'm not one to judge, but you can leave us a comment on the Soundcheck website. Coming up next, hours of internet searching, phone calls, and dead ends all pay off with a simple hello. Just trust me on this one. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and the band Milo Green is here in the studio. That's right, the band is called Milo Green. They're from California. They've just released their self-titled debut album. Guys, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
Andrew, tell me what you want to play for us first.
First song we're doing is 1957.
The band is called Milo Green, live on Soundcheck.
Nothing about you.
The band is Milo Green, live on Soundcheck, and a song called 1957 from their debut album, Milo Green, which is out now. Milo Green is a band, not a person. There aren't actually any Milo Greens in the group, although they do have an Andrew Herringer and a Marlena Sheets, who are at microphones. And guys, welcome back. So how did you come up with the name Milo Green?
Robbie and I went to college together, and while we were in college, we were playing in separate bands. And at some point, as we were kind of climbing the level of professionalism, we wanted to create this character named Milo Green to be our booking agent. So we created a Gmail and a little website and MySpace, and he started sending out emails for us to venues to be our booking agent, and we got quite a few gigs that way.
Okay. Did you imagine what Milo Green looked like, sounded like?
Yes, he comes in many forms, but today he's British and albino.
Always wears a monocle.
And a three-piece suit.
So it's a completely imaginary person. There is no Milo Green.
There is no Milo Green.
That, Marlena, is where you are wrong. Because I would like to introduce you guys to someone. He's joining us on the line. Milo Green, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Milo lives in Sneedville, Tennessee.
Oh, what's up?
Yes, and Milo in Tennessee, did you know that there was a band out there using your name?
No, I didn't.
And how Very nice to meet you, Milo.
How did you feel about it when you found out?
I think it's great.
Do you listen to a lot of rock music, Milo?
No, I don't. Mostly Christian music and hillbilly music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bluegrass?
Yes, bluegrass.
Yeah.
My sons that's grown and gone now, when they were young, they did. They listened to some.
Mm-hmm. So is Milo your real name, Milo, or is it a shortened form of something else?
No, that's my real name, Milo Carlin Green.
And it's Green with an E at the end, right?
Yes, and Republican.
Okay. How about you guys? It's Milo Green with an E at the end.
Correct.
Republicans? You don't have to answer that.
We don't get political.
Have you guys ever met a Milo Green before? Real Milo Green?
To be honest, when we started the band and we were looking at getting a website happening, we looked up Milo Green without the E, and it's a blog that a guy set up for his child. So we figured that we had to use the E to have milogreen.com, and the rest is history.
Milo Green, the band, here with us in the Soundcheck studio. Would you guys play a song for Milo Green in Tennessee?
Absolutely.
All right.
This one's for you, Milo.
And what's it called?
Great.
This one's called Don't You Give Up On Me.
Go.
The song's called Don't You Give Up On Me, live performance once again in the Soundcheck studio from the California band Milo Green. That's Marlena Sheets and Andrew Herringer, Graham Fink, and Robbie Arnett all singing and playing various guitars and basses and mandolins and whatnot, and Curtis Marrero behind the drum kit. Collectively, they are the band Milo Green. Their debut album is out now. And on the line with us, still, from Sneedville, Tennessee, is the person, Milo Green. Milo, I know you don't normally listen to that sort of music. What'd you think of that?
Well, I think it was great. It sounded good.
Yes.
I wish them success.
Thank you, sir.
Now, if you guys do get really successful, I mean, if this band, you're just getting started and already there's some really positive feedback to the record, what happens if you guys get really famous and here you are with poor Milo's name?
Well, I don't know.
They could send me a CD.
We would love to.
That sounds
fair.
If
we could get his address, I would love to.
You know what, Milo? Stay on the line so we can get your information and get a Milo Green CD to you. And thanks very much for being with us on the show today.
It was a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Milo Green, the band, here in the Soundcheck studio. And coming up later in the show, they'll return with another live performance. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Sometimes my team comes to me with these wild suggestions, like this one from assistant producer Greta Cohn. The email I got from her late last night said, John, tomorrow we'll be talking about hot pants. That's Soundcheck's producers for you, always getting to the bottom of important matters. Greta, care to explain yourself?
Yes, well, we are getting to the bottom, literally, of a very important matter, and the matter at hand is the story of hot pants. Do you know what hot pants are, John?
I was a little kid, but I do clearly remember hot pants. But you know, when people talk about hot pants, on the rare occasion that they do anymore, it's usually in the context of the James Brown song.
One, two, three, ah! Hot pants, smoking that hot pants. That's where it's at, that's where it's at. Take your pants off on, it looks much better time. My feet will keep going, girl.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and you know, that's actually a three-part single, and he says hot pants 127 times, which is more times than he says please and please, please, please. So he was serious.
Okay,
he was serious about this tiny garment called the hot pant.
They were just short shorts, right?
Short shorts.
Okay. In terms of music, obviously, it had a big impact because that song was a huge hit. I remember that song as a kid. What about, like, fashion-wise?
They seem to just kind of explode on the scene in the winter of 1971. So this song from James Brown is from the summertime. Actually, right about this time in 1971, it was on the charts. When it really hit on the streets, in the malls, on the catwalks, 1971 in the winter. And it just kind of exploded. And I actually called up Valerie Steele. She's a fashion historian. She's the director of the museum at the Fashion Institute of Technology. And I asked her, you know, what happened?
Oh, it was hugely widespread. I mean, for that year that it lasted, it was absolutely astonishing. There are newspaper photographs of, you know, women in offices leaning over the desk and they're wearing these microscopic hot pants. You have people getting married in hot pants. You have fur hot pants. Just it was ubiquitous. And then it was sort of gone.
So was it a fashion disaster?
It was a huge trend. It was a trend, and then, like a lot of trends do, it disappeared. I found a report from the December 31st edition of Life magazine for the year 1971, and the title of their article is Hot Pants, A Short But Happy Career. So clearly people were having a good time with hot pants, whether you were wearing them, whether you were watching people wear them.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know anybody who wore them back then?
Actually, my mom. My mom wore hot pants, and I called her up to find out a little bit more.
Everybody was wearing hot pants wherever you went. some people look better in them than others. And for myself, I had to sort of work at it. So I would keep my weight down and did lots of exercise. I got into jogging, running to keep my weight down so that I could wear that kind of clothes.
Well, now that's interesting. So there was like a health benefit to this trend.
I don't know if you would call it a health benefit. I think it was more like a huge pressure. It seems like the idea of dieting and keeping your weight down kind of exploded around the same time as this. Like, models were getting really skinny. Women's bodies, you know, as they are, were all kinds of different sizes. But to fit into a tiny little pair of polyester pants, you had to be really tiny. So this idea of real intense dieting really hit the culture in a big way.
And of course, this is also in the wake of the 60s and the sexual revolution and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. So skin was in.
All right. So we heard the James Brown song, Hot Pants. James Brown never won to let a trend go by without, you know, sniffing some way of making a song out of it, I suppose. He kind of started something with that.
If the hot pant trend began in the winter and women were suddenly everywhere wearing them, James Brown started the musical trend about hot pants. This song kind of set off an increasing number of answer songs.
So give me an example of one.
Okay, well, one of them actually was sent to me by the DJ Jonathan Tobin. He's a New York sort of soul and dance DJ. And the song that he sent to me is so hilarious. It actually references James Brown. They're called Soul Brothers Inc., a band from Houston. And this one is called Girl in the Hot Pants.
Hello, Ruby Hardy. What you gonna wear to see James Brown tonight? Well, you can wear whatever you wanna wear. I'm gonna wear my hot pants. Woo!
Hey, man, look at her dance.
Ooh. The girl over there in the hot pants.
Where? Right over there. Hey, man, look at her dance.
Ooh. The girl over there in the hot pants.
Gone down the rabbit hole.
Can I just tell you that when that Soul Brothers Inc. thing started, I thought you were pulling a fast one on us. I thought maybe you had gotten like something from South Park. That sounded like Mr. Hankey singing the beginning of that song. Greta Cohn's assistant producer here at Soundcheck, and to my surprise, talking to us about a long gone fashion item, the short shorts known as hot pants. How short?
Very, very short, less than 2 inches in the inseam.
Now,
according to
what does that
some.
Mean? What is inseam? I'm sorry, you see how I dress: t-shirt, jeans. What do I know from inseams?
That's when you take your measuring tape and you measure from the crotch down.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
So
2 inches.
2 inches
or less.
Right, exactly. From, I guess, what James Brown might call the spank.
and people were pretty much into measuring where things were fashion-wise back then.
They were. They definitely were. And the songs that we have that left behind from some very, very obscure bands, of which there's very little information to find out today, they actually have told the story of this garment through the songs. And then people are actually talking about where this garment came from, why it's here, what kind of confusion existed before. Apparently, there's this idea that there was a hemline confusion in 1969 and 1970. People just simply did not know what length of skirt to wear. I actually confirmed this fact with Valerie Steele, who we heard from earlier. She said first there was the maxi, then there was the mini, then there was the midi skirt that is actually just kind of mid-calf. Which is a very unsexy length.
Mm-hmm.
And this band called Salvage has a song also just called Hot Pants, and they tell the fashion history of the garment.
Remember the days of the mini? That was good. That was good. But then they switched to the maxi. Never should. Never should. The midi came, the midi went, it didn't last too long. And now the girls are getting smart and coming on real strong. I'm walking in their hot pants, the cutest little hot pants, all around the city, looking kinda pretty, strolling in their hot pants. Rich girls, poor girls, even little shy girls,
short girls, tall girls, make you wanna tiger.
Hot pants, pretty little hot pants. Goodness gracious, from Washington to Maine, pretty little ladies are driving men insane, or walking in their hot pants.
So that band is called Salvage?
They're called Salvage.
Never heard of them or the song.
No.
This is pretty obscure. So everybody's getting from James Brown to these obscure bands, mm-hmm. getting into the act, singing about this these hot pants. And a recurring theme, at least among the guys, is watching women. You know, the women make us go crazy in their hot pants. Again, post-60s, we've had women's lib and stuff. How did people like your mom, who wore these things, sort of reconcile that with, you know, walking down the street being ogled by guys in, you know, as they wore their hot pants?
Well, it's funny you should ask, John, because I asked my mom that very question.
Well, I also think that it was, for me, part of sort of the feminist women's lib, where like you could wear whatever you wanted to wear, you know, Betty Friedan and the feminine mystique kind of a thing.
Now, what is that, Greta?
That's Trouble in Hot Pants City.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
So a little bit of moralizing about the hot pants there. It's going to get you in trouble, girl. And so women may be slightly ambiguous about how they felt about these things?
There are a few songs that I found sung by female, with, you know, women singers. And there is a variety of reaction. Like, some are excited that they can go to the mall and buy a pair of hot pants and kind of like prowl around. But yeah, and then there's this band, Norma and the Heartaches, who we just heard, which were a Philly soul band. And yeah, she's cautioning. There's a cautionary note there.
Yeah.
And in fact, what happened was, yeah, hot pants kind of did turn into a little bit of trouble.
How so?
After 1971, when they ceased to be like super mainstream, where no women were not wearing them to the office, not wearing them to the altar, they kind of changed in tone. And they were adopted by disco groups and became a part of that sort of disco generation. And as we all know, disco sucked. Not really, but, you know, they became associated with sort of social and sexual outliers. Mm. Even sort of just a few years later in Taxi Driver, we see Jodie Foster. She's a teenage prostitute. She's wearing hot pants. They became associated more with streetwalkers and sex workers and became less of a mainstream thing.
Hmm.
And hot pants songs really do drop off, too. I looked around. If you search for 1971 for hot pants songs, there is song after song after song. 1972 comes around, and there's like a severe drop-off. The JBs have another song about hot pants, that's James Brown's backing band, but they really kind of, they just sort of disappear a little bit.
Now, Greta, I mean, you've got more songs than we have time for today, so people can check out the website and get more information.
You can check out the playlist, and there are a lot of really great, really funny, really sexy songs. Kind of a great end of summer playlist, if you ask me.
All right, we're talking about hot pants and the music it inspired back in the early 70s with Soundcheck producer Greta Cohn. And so, Greta, you mentioned that, you know, by 1972, there's a severe drop-off in the number of songs about hot pants. And yet, many years later, the B-52s come up with a song about hot pants. Of course, by this point, it's dripping with irony, isn't it?
It is. And I think that's kind of where hot pants are today. They're dripping with irony. You know, you see them at the roller derby with derby girls, and you can't really walk into an American Apparel or down Bedford Avenue in Williamsburg without running into a pair or several hot pants. You know, yeah, they're part of...
Being worn ironically by hipsters in Williamsburg? Is
exactly,
that what you're saying?
Exactly.
All right. I'll have to schedule another trip to Williamsburg. Greta Cohn is part of the Soundcheck team and put together the web story about hot pants and the songs they inspired. Check it out on the Soundcheck website. Greta, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, John. See you in the cubicles.
Up next, another live performance from the band Milo Green. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're back with the California indie band Milo Green. They're about to play another song from their new self-titled album live in the studio. This is called Cutty Love.
As the world. burn us both alive. Time can overcomplicate, darling, I refuse to wait. There's no way you're planning for the fall. All your doubts will fade away, questions read by years of pain. I can be the answer to it all. Even if your heart stops, I'll be there to hold you up. Even as the world turns, I'll be there to watch the fire burn. Burn us both alive. Oh, it'll burn. Burn us both alive.
Once again, the band Milo Green from California here in our New York studio, and a song called Cutty Love from their debut album, also called Milo Green. And guys, this has been great fun having you here with us in the studio today.
Wonderful.
You have a new listener in Sneedville, Tennessee, that you didn't have half an hour
ago.
That
was quite a surprise.
Thank you for introducing us to Milo Green.
All right. Thank you for introducing our listeners to the band Milo Green and the music from the debut record. This is Soundcheck.
What's the matter? What's the matter with your name? What's the matter? What's the matter with your name? Oh, your love is never good enough. Oh, your love is lost on me.
Going to do it for the show today. By the way, have you noticed that we've been starting and ending our podcasts with Soundcheck jingles? Well, those came to us courtesy of you, the listeners, and we need more. So visit the Soundcheck page at soundcheckworkshop.org and click on Sing It, Create a Jingle for Us. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The show is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our intern is Zachariah Hughes. And today's jingle came from Sky Filippi. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. And of course,
I'm gonna wear my hot pants! Woo! Hey, man! Get her dance!
The girl over there in the hot pants.
Right over there. Hey, man, get her dance.
Who's the girl over there in the hot pants?
Where? Right over there. Doc told me to take it easy. Are you gonna go before your time? But a good-looking woman in hot pants kill me. I don't mind dying. Hey, man, get her dance.
Who's the girl over there in the hot pants?
Where?
Some.